don't touch anything.
It's the greatest find yet. Nothing compares to it.
But it's definitely something you should hear.
This is The Real Deal with Larry Lawton.
Welcome to The Real Deal with me, Larry Lawton, and my sidekick Morty's on with me now. Yes, that's our mascot in the office, and he is everybody's going to get to meet Morty. We're going to start putting up some shorts with him. He's so much fun. I love this thing. So this dog. Anyway, guys, first of all, I want to thank everybody. We got a good show today. I have a guy named Scott Brady, who's the founder of Ziggy Snake. It's a YouTube channel. He's a great investigator, and him and I are going to be discussing a project we want to do. And we said, let's just do it on a show because he's that good. You've heard his work. If you haven't, you should go over to his channel. I'll have a link in this show for it as well. Because he's the, really, I don't say that. I'm on YouTube 24/7. Believe me, everybody. Always looking at different content, just liking different things. And it's crazy. So anyway, I found his channel and he emailed me as well, and I emailed him back, and I looked up his channel and the investigating stuff he does. Whether you believe in the topic or not, and I argue with him about topics. So I like that. I like a guy, but he's going to give you another side of it. And I think that's so important. And I think the more you can do that with anybody, the better you're going to be. And I really am. I'm looking forward today. I'm looking forward to this show. So is Morty. Morty's really our he's my man. Look at him. You guys, if you haven't seen Morty, just go over to the video and you check him out. Morty's going to be on. Morty is about 6 years old. He's a half American Bulldog and a pit bull, and he had just had major surgery on one leg. He has to have major surgery on another leg, so he's been laid up, but he's pretty good, you know. So what happened? I just heard a ping or something happened here, but I don't know. Anyway, Nick, can we call now? I want to call Zig. I want to also thank our sponsor, of course, Oliva Cigar. They are really good people, and oh, I see what that is. That is my phone. No, it's clinging to my phone because I'm calling him now. Nick, you want to do that, please? I'll do it right now. Let me call Scott. Oh, there it is. I got it.
Hello?
Hello, Scott.
Hey, Larry.
Hey, Scott. How you doing? Okay, I got you clear. All right. So, yeah, we're on with Scott. Everybody, I was telling you about Scott Brady, and Scott has a channel called Ziggy Snake. I think it's Ziggy. Am I saying it right, Scott?
Ziggy with a C.
Oh, Ziggy. Oh, like a cigarette. Ziggy with a...
Yeah.
Ziggy with the C. And he has channel. He's a great investigative... I call him, I guess, a journalist. You'd call him now. And he does his research, and I wanted to discuss a project with him, so I said, let's just do it right online, and it's a prison project. I had some ideas with him. Maybe he can add more bang to that, because I think he's great on the research end. So we're going to talk to him right now. First of all, Scott, how you been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Life goes on. Honestly, not a whole lot happening on my end. So.
Well, where are you at now? I forgot. I forgot where you were at.
Colorado.
Oh, you're in Colorado then. Yeah. Sure. Let me get that a hair lower. Yeah. Lower? Yeah, a little lower. Oh, no. It's going down. Okay. Scott, give me a test.
Hello?
Yeah. Oh, it's perfect. That's good. Anyway, Scott, so he's Colorado. How's the weather right now?
Actually, really pleasant. Beautiful 70, overcast, bit of breeze. Oh. After this interview, I was actually going to take a walk. So.
Oh, that'd be nice. You know, it's funny because I went to, I'm supposed to go to Colorado in June, but I don't think I'm not. I just was at a lunch or dinner with some people, and we think we're canceling that. But we were going to Red Rocks to see the Steve Martin band. Anyway, I'm sure you've been to Red Rocks there.
No, yeah, it's the spot.
That's like, you know, the best place there, you know. Plus, obviously.
I
also know some people. I'm supposed to also go to a baseball game. I don't know what time of the year, too. There's something going on there. And I'm going to go to a Colorado Rockies game. And I know some people on the team, so it's good. And then that'll be fun to get back down there to Colorado.
Well, that's sick.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. But so what was your latest project, Scott? You want to tell our audience any of your latest projects?
Well, the latest project that I did with YouTube was, so obviously Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the war in Ukraine is a major topic. The state of Russia is increasingly authoritarian in its flavor, totalitarian almost. You're seeing a lot of rewriting of history, a lot of propagandizing around the state of Russia. And one area where we're seeing this, and an area that I think is underappreciated in its, I guess, scope and impact, is Russia's science and the way in which they are presenting their scientific history. So again, you're seeing a great rewriting of history in terms of what Russia has done, what Russia's impact has been on the world from a scientific point of view, slant, whatever you want to call it. And in line with this, due to the increasing authoritarianism and just the unjustifiable war in Ukraine by Russia, you're seeing a pretty significant brain drain in Russia of their top research talent, which obviously is terrible for Russian science, but that has a knock-on effect on global science because Russia is, of course, part of the globe. But there's also a fair bit of science that can only really be done in Russia or by Russians, namely in regards to climate change. So that was a whole investigation video, whatever you want to call it, looking at that specific issue currently going on with Russia.
You know, they always say, though, that the victor writes history. So, I mean, I don't know who the victor is anymore. You know, I mean, I don't even get, you know, it, as a guy, I love history. I'm a big history buff, geography, that kind of stuff. So, you know, the understanding of that whole area when, you know, when the former Soviet Union fell, because I was in the Cold War. I was literally in the military, and we used to, you know, jets would come over our boat, and we, our jets would go chase them. You know, it was amazing. Cat and mouse game during the 80s, you know, and I was in that, and I was in the Coast Guard, where there were some major incidents when, with defection, and, you know, a lot of stuff happened back in those days. But anyway, so now what is winning? Like, okay, what's Russia want? They want Ukraine back. I'm sure it's more for the resources and a lot than just what they're saying. They want to unify their lands. Now, how are they going to go to Poland? I mean, where are they going next and next and next? Who knows, you know? Obviously,
that is the major concern surrounding Russia at this point. You can look at Vladimir Putin's justifications for this special military operation, along with his consistent longing for the good old days of the Soviet Union. And given the fact that he is just the singular autocrat of Russia, I mean, he obviously has to work around with oligarchs here and there, but he's basically driving the ship of state, and he can do what he wants in terms of returning to, again, those good old days of the Soviet Union. And this appears to be a manifestation thereof.
Well, yeah, I don't know how deep you can, you know, get into that, because obviously it's the people. Only one who could change that is the people, when they don't want that anymore, and their living conditions get so poor that they want an overturn. They don't. That's why you can't. Here's the biggest problem what people don't get with the Russian. I had Russian people in here. I have had Ukrainian people in my podcast. And matter of fact, that Dr. Vinarsky still donates and stuff to go down. He's from Ukraine, originally from Russia, which most of them were. And as he said to me, he goes, you know, this is amazing. Is but in 2000, and you know, when they've been having what a freedom for about 20 years now, Ukraine, I mean, under their own total democracy, about 20 years. You cannot,
closer to 30, but
maybe that. So whatever number of those years are, you can't take a guy your age who's never knew anything but freedom. You ain't giving this up. This is freedom. And then you take the old people like my age who might have remembered communism and how it was, and then you give them freedom. Now you're going to take that and go back? No, I'll die for it, you know? So it almost reminds me a lot of America, you know, during World War II. If that war was lost, we're speaking German. You know, the world is speaking German. It's not, you know, and Hitler took over and everything else. So, I mean, I look back at things like that. It was a unification of the world. This is kind of, I don't see who, when you start a war and you have to have justification for starting that war, what was it? You curse somebody out, you know, something stupid, or was it, you did something, you kidnapped 100 of our citizens or something and tortured them, you know, whatever goes on there. So It's just, it boggles my mind right now to this day, in today's geopolitical world, especially how we are in a world economy, world, social place. Everything is the world now. It's no more the United States or Canada or Mexico or England or Russia or Germany. It's really a one world country now. Call it what they want. They had all those conspiracy theories that, you know, all that kind of stuff going on. But I think you get what I mean. So I think it's hard.
I 100% get what you're getting at. We're in an increasingly globalized world. These actions of outright invading another country are aberrations, frankly.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, how do you think you could occupy something where they don't want you there? I mean, just people know too much today. It's not like you can brainwash them as easy. You know, it's the internet. They have social media. They have a zillion things they can do. And they do it.
While I agree with that, that's predicated on people having decent and reasonable access to those resources in the first place. Predicated on their media ecosystem being relatively fair, relatively unbiased, relatively uncontrolled, in a sense. And unfortunately, when you do have states like Russia, like China, like many of the other authoritarian policies on this globe of ours, they tamp down very heavily on the dissemination of information and can craft a broader media narrative that supports the party line, as it were.
Everybody, listen, we do that here. As much as you don't think
100%. I don't deny that.
Okay.
it's a matter of gradations, I suppose, where in certain countries, in certain areas, it's much more overt, it's much more detached from reality, it's much more rooted in whatever sort of political or broader goal the ruling elite have for their society, for their media, et cetera. But no, I'm not denying that there isn't media collusion and in our country,
you know,
or the West in general.
Scott, what at a guy my age at 62, I've been in politics for a long time, been in government, robbed government, both sides of the world, so to speak, you want to call it the military. You know, I've learned a couple of things, that a lot of what we think matters doesn't matter. I mean, the reason I'm, you know, I love that young people are for the environment, because I am still too. But I've been hearing since I was a kid at 10 years old that by the year 2000, there's no way the keys are going to be here. Nothing's going to be here. The whole world's going to be underwater. The tides. Zero thing has happened in 50 years since then. And I've been hearing that for 50 years. How much bullshit or how much stuff is just natural evolution of the planet, of the times, or natural reactions to whatever's going to hit. So I'm not saying I'm jaded. I'm not. And I love that you, and I love this about you, Scott, you have that energy, that fire, that, listen, I'm sitting here today, I was watching the Trump, the whole Supreme Court, because, you know, I do law, so I love that kind of stuff. And I'm listening to oral arguments in the case for the, unprecedented power, you know, that the president should have. And it was just great to hear the arguments, and I got back, and it gave me that hope again. I hate to say that I don't have hope. That's where we're going to get onto a project I want to do with you. But I wanted to look at, like, what you inspire me about is that you go at this with a good open heart. You know, you're logical about the research you do both sides, you do the stuff with the gambling, the lottery, and everything you've done. So I love that part of it. And I just don't want you to get jaded either, because the more you see, and then the more you see, realize what you thought mattered didn't mean shit, you start realizing, wait a minute, just get to the people right close that you care about, do them right, you know, do people right, period. But, you know, look at, I don't know if you've heard about the story about Mr. Beast. He gave water wells in Africa or something. That then they were crucifying him because he was a white guy or something like that. I said,
I've seen something about him getting, as you said, crucified for that. There's a lot of, frankly, pissants on Twitter and what have you that are eager to tar and feather anyone and everything for doing anything of note or import or usefulness. It's just something that you have to, frankly, mock and just laugh at from a distance. It's not worth your time, almost.
No, 100%. Now, that's what brings me on to a question I want with you, and I'm asking it on the air. Well, you and I talked about doing a project together or something like that, and I had this in mind. I want your ideas or your thoughts, and we can bang it around here for a minute. I want to research the Bureau of Prisons, the people in it, the officials, maybe in the last 10 years, and see where they are now. Are they in the private industry? You know, they were making X amount now, and now they live in, you know, where they're making $50 million a year. Where did some of these...
Revolving door politics.
Right. Where is all this? How are these government employees, how are these guys going from the Bureau of Prisons onto a private prison industry making, you know, stocks and bonds $1 million because they're bringing all their knowledge and how to screw the system and how to screw people to the private industry? The area of corrections or the area of rehabilitation, area of prisons and what we're doing is and should be getting more and more light, if you know what I mean. Can you get a water, please? Getting more light. And light by that, I mean, given the good answers, given like, hey, why do we think the Bureau of Prisons is messed up? Well, look at the last five directors. They came from this area or this sector, had no idea this sector. Like, we have a Bureau of Prisons director right now. She comes in 2 years ago. Give or take a couple months either way. Did you know just a few months ago, she was in a congressional hearing, and the congressman asked, well, how many people do you need to give you to make the Bureau of Prisons whole, where, you know, not understaffed and all that? She did not know a number. If I'm a CEO of a company, and I'm there for a year and a half, and I don't know how many people I need to make this company run like a fine tooth comb, so to speak, or whatever it is, the saying, then I'm not doing my job. How many? Do you need 5,000 people across the country? I mean, how many down? Are you 10% down at every prison times, you know, whatever it is? And we need this kind of budget, you know? She says she doesn't know. So I'm blown away, and I think no wonder things don't happen. No wonder things don't happen in government. Because they did all this shit. They have her on a hearing. What are you going to do? Now what? They get another one who doesn't know. Here's where I think they're wrong. I don't know if you ever heard my solution, how to fix the prisons. And I literally said it, and I can do it. And I can put a team together, and I can show them where they can get the budget from, which it wouldn't cost them any more money. These private companies would take care of that. And put X amount of teams together. And here's the key. The team has to have a guy like me who's been in the prison, been in the hole, understands the system, has to have a prison guard, former guard, understands that side of it, a former medical personnel, and one of my team would be either a nurse or understands clinical stuff, what has to happen in clinics. For that, I would bring a bookkeeper on my team, and preferably one who's dealt with the kind of size companies that each prison would be. Like if it had 300 employees and X amount of stuff. So I'd have that. And I would have special access. Here's how that only works. The Bureau of Prisons puts out a memo. It says there is a special team that can come to your prison anytime they want, any day they want. And you have got to give them full access to that prison, unfettered. And if you deny this, you'll be fired the next day. Here's why. Then I can get up with my team at 2 a.m. and say, let's go. We're going to go to this prison. And we're going to go in there, and we're going to really inspect the prison the way we know it has to be inspected, where they can't hide the bad inmates, where they can't clean up things and order different things and hide shit and hide bad cases. We would go in there. I would find out what exactly is going on in that prison, and not there to fire them. I'm there to now give it to the warden and say, this has to be done or fixed or whatever. You would stop abuses because they don't know when you're coming, and we see a beaten inmate, and we know what to do. And the only way you do that, because when they do what they think, they have a thing called the ACA, American Accreditation Association. It's a crock of shit. These institutions go through this bullshit. They know they're coming. They paint the buildings. They sweep the walks. They give you the best food. They suck your dick for the fucking time you're in there, and then you're fucking... After they leave, you're back to the gutter. So it's bullshit. I would have it where we could talk to any inmate, and they would talk to me because I'd know how a way to keep them safe. And then I would do that. And then and you can build a few of these teams in states or government, and you will stop abuses immediately, the beatings, because you're going to know right away what's going on in a prison, and you're going to have real inspections, real stuff. You're going to get rid of the bad guards and the bad people quicker because you're going to let the ward know. And that's it. You got a big company. You have 300 employees. You're going to have bad employees. We know that. So let's get rid of him.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. It's just a numbers game. You know that. I mean, I can.
Exactly. No, the.
So you get where I'm going with it. The research on this would, I think, is you. And I was thinking about it. And I was saying, we can maybe research and do something and even put that out into research. Just, you know, get something published on it. Hey, man, buddy. Yeah, my buddy.
It's something to look into. It's a approach that most likely is not being taken in any sense by our current oversight authorities for the Bureau of Prisons. As you said, they're able to, dress themselves up in preparation for these inspections, interviews, essentially, and make themselves out to be actually decent facilities when they are anything but. So having a much more rapid, unpredictable system that can actually catch them with their pants down is vital in that, vital in actually sniffing out the issues with them.
Well, it's not even just about catching them. It's about if they know it's there, it's a preventing measure. Not only that, you know, it's not like that they're, a lot of them just get lazy. A lot of them just don't care. Some of them are outright corrupt, obviously, but some are just don't care, and they're so lax. Things happen. People die. Medical issues happen. And everybody has to realize, no matter what a person did in there, it's somebody's son or somebody's father or somebody's grandfather or whatever, brother.
And I mean, the other thing with it is they're sentenced to 15 years. They're sentenced to 20 years. They're not given a death sentence.
Absolutely.
The only populace in this country that actually has a legally or governmentally mandated right to health care are inmates.
And they don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because it's very easy to disregard inmates out of pocket and and demonize them as the dregs of the earth, as undeserving of XYZ. And it's not as though there aren't some true monsters out there that are indeed deserving of nothing. But we're dealing with people who may have just fallen into the wrong crowd, may have made some really dumb decisions, people who may just be innocent for all intents and purposes. And to treat them all in the exact same manner as the absolute scum of society, one, is terrible in its own right. It's not a appropriate response or appropriate punishment. And two, I think you've said it before, that 95% of people in prison will be released at one point or another. You treat them like abject shit and rob them of any hope they have in society, they're going to continue acting in an antisocial manner. They're going to recidivate. They're going to end back up in jail. They're going to commit more crimes whilst out and just, again, end back up in jail.
Are they going to kill somebody? I mean, let's face it. I told them it's not even about money.
Another way of putting it, yeah.
You know, I could tell you how much money I'm going to save you. I did numbers on this. I have numbers on this. How much you'd save by not one person, just reducing the population. How much in crime, how much in whole works. I says, but, you know, forget all those numbers. Yeah, we're going to save a ton of money. The program works. You know what you're going to do? You might just save somebody from getting killed. Now, what is that worth?
Exactly.
I mean, you could talk all you want about whatever you want. How much is it when that person gets killed and he was a perfect person that we could have prevented to do that to that poor guy, and he killed him, and we could have prevented it if we just did the right thing and not gave a shit. Now, how do we feel? I mean, I know how it is. Trust me, some of these people have worse hearts than any of people I've ever met. But it is what it is. What is your thoughts on that? I wanted to deep into that because I think there's such good topics there with reform, truly cutting the cost of incarceration, why private prisons don't work or do work, but I know they don't. But I can go into that. I did that recently.
I'm with you 100% on private prisons not working. Like, my first appearance with you here about a year ago is exactly what we talked about. And they're just a bastard institution. They should not exist in a modern country, in a country that wants to consider itself to be part of the 21st century, as it were.
100%.
So,
I remember talking to you about that. It boggles my mind that we think it's okay to lock up. listen, lockup is necessary for the worst of the worst. Or are people going to hurt somebody? But there's so many incidents where you can use a better punishment, whether it was, I often bring up the case of Michael Vick, the quarterback, who ends up going to prison for the dog fights. And what a waste of jail time when they could have said, okay, you know, you got to spend $2 million on speaking at animal cruelty facilities or something. And it would have been a lot better served. What do you think? There was a deterrent there? Give me a break, you know?
So, exactly.
And we can get into that. But I'm looking more now on the corrupt side. Scott, just to let you know, are these...
Understandable.
Who's making the money? Why is this prison system, whether it's private prison, let's jump into them. There's CoreCivic and there's Geo. They're the two big dogs.
Yeah.
Who's the CEO? This is all you, because you're good at that. You know, who's the CEO?
Well,
how much they make? What
to,
was their, you know, their package and all this kind of stuff?
Oh, their compensation packages are well into the seven figures, just like actual cash. And then when you get stock options, it's even worse than that. It's grotesque, frankly.
Well, that's what we got to see and see why it, you know, who's in it. Now, who are them? Now, if they're making that money and they're paying people, what congressmen are making money? You know, why is this happening until your kid goes to jail or something?
From what I've seen, the general distribution of lobbying funds for private prisons typically skews Republican. The last number that I saw was like a 4-to-1 ratio between Republicans and Democrats.
100%, I believe.
Similarly, I believe you see greater, I guess, incidences or percentage of prisoners in private prisons in redder regions of the country. That's not to say that blue states or purple states don't have private prisons. Colorado here, I think.
No, you're 100% right, though. No, you're. But listen, yeah. Of course, you got Texas and Florida. I mean, that's your big. That's
exactly.
Your big two,
exactly.
Right there, so. And of course, all of those states, you know, even Angola, Louisiana, one of the worst prisons. The prison system.
Louisiana is a depressing state on so many levels.
I know.
Yeah.
Anybody who builds a town in a ditch, you got to think twice about where their reasoning comes from.
Yeah, kind of.
But anyway, what is your thought? Can you wanna like? I mean, there's a lot. I'm sure there's a lot to do. What are you doing, Morty? Morty, come here. Nick, watch him. Morty wanted to get down. If he does. I'm with Morty as our mascot. Yeah.
Heard that.
Yeah. All right. No, he's good, the dog. But anyway, I mean, I'd love to find out what like a former warden. I can give you a few names of wardens I know, you know, that were in the Bureau of Prisons. I did hear one named LaManna. John LaManna, he went with one of the private companies. I don't know if he died or not, but I heard he was making buku bucks that's the guy that abused me. And he went from the Bureau of Prisons to the private prison sector.
Revolving door system.
Oh, of course, you know. They get trained here, they screw everybody here, and they go make the big bucks and screw everybody, you know, because they don't have a heart, man. They've showed that they can just close the door and watch people get beaten, and it won't even bother them, you know. So I love these people who say, fucking don't get me on all these politics and all this shit. Get me going. I want to stay away from a lot of it, but you can't, you know that. Nobody can really stay away from
it's impossible to avoid it, and at that point you might as well just full bore stare into the abyss and try and seal it up in some sense, I guess.
I actually did. I told you, I was watching the presidential Supreme Court motions for the immunity. And it was really interesting. I love the law, man. I love getting back into that kind of stuff. But this is why this end. I'd love to find and prove some kind of corruption or prove something in the Bureau of Prisons.
I feel finding that proof probably wouldn't be too difficult. I mean, ultimately, the general revolving door system of politics that we have is just far enough to establish essentially plausible deniability for people who go into private industry from the public sector. But it's still so obvious to anyone who observes it neutrally from the outside to see that progression And from there, it's sort of open secret. So I'm not sure what the exact solution would be at that point, and just continue raising attention of this issue and hoping that there can be some sort of sufficient public outcry to address it, or what do you think would be a good approach in that regard?
Well, I've been thinking about that. And obviously, the problem inmates have is, there's not, listen, like you said, they're viewed as the dregs of society. Obviously, listen, there's a lot more criminals who didn't get caught, so we know that. We can go that route. But I think that's a hard sell. I think the best sell for the public is how it can really affect you as a citizen by getting killed by one of these people, or that don't have hope, that weren't given a hands up, so you're their next victim. I often said...
I fully agree with that framing it in terms of not the abuse or the victimization of the perceived dregs of society, even though, again, they aren't. It's a much more nuanced matter than that. But putting it in terms of, hey, if we don't reform this institution, we're going to have more crime. We're going to have greater costs. It's going to come back to bite us in some fashion. It's going to affect those we love in one form or another, et cetera.
100%.
That more so appeals to people's self-interest and greed, which are almost, you can expect those attributes or parts of humanity to be found in literally everyone, whereas the sort of broader, I guess, empathy on this matter is not as common, unfortunately.
But what it really triggers to is people want their loved ones, whether they're grandkids or their kids, mothers, people, whoever, to be safe. And if you had the resources or the knowledge to keep a person safe, and you heard certain things like we're talking about, what are you going to do? You're going to make sure your kid is safe, make sure your wife or whatever it is. So however that worked, that's what you're going to do. I mean, obviously, so what do you want to do? You don't want, man, if you're telling me that if I donate enough, that we're going to save 7 people from maybe getting killed and, 75 people from getting robbed. Yes, your donation will help this. This is how it works. This is why we want to do this and focus on this rehabilitation, because we know this many people won't go back. And if they don't go recidivate, that means they're not committing another crime. And here's what we're saving, because if they did commit that crime, without it even being murder, it's damage.
The incarceration cost would be dramatically
higher. They don't get, oh, fuck them, I don't care. I'll give you all the money to keep them in there. No, it's not even that. It's you got to show that they're getting out. Let's face it, buddy. They're getting out.
That's the other thing.
And then when they get out, do you want him living next to you when he don't give a fuck and he just might just cut your head off because that's what he's pissed off now because he has no hope? No, you
precisely.
Don't want that.
Precisely.
I hope you don't want that. And I look at that in that regard. But I think that's the one. And I don't know what you have to show. But I think it'd be interesting to show people how corrupt it really is. Like some people think, they need to be in there. Wait a minute. Do you remember to pay for prison? Do you remember that? Do you remember in Pennsylvania, the judges with the juveniles?
Yep.
That is
kids
that,
for cash.
That, kids for cash, right. That to this day, when I think about those girls, I wish I was in prison. I think I would have fucked them both. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, everybody out there. I get very mad.
We can cut it in.
Sorry for cussing. His sketch. You ever hear his sketch? Sorry for cussing. But you get my point. But anyway.
But yeah, Kids for Cash, it being a abomination.
Yeah, a total abomination. There's a couple of things. Matter of fact, when I got you on the line, I wanted to do another one. Listen, I was talking to a couple of friends of mine, right? And one guy's a gay guy. We're all good friends. And we were discussing the military, like today. Is it, when I was in the military, they would kick you out if they even thought you had any kind of guy sexual encounter, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then now, of course, it's don't ask, don't tell, nobody cares. And I always said, why does people care? I don't care who's with me, and we're fighting for the same thing. I mean, that's just, that's, I don't know if it goes back to inherent racism or just a prejudice.
Homophobia.
I mean, homophobia, I think that's a big one. And I think, you know, because, you know, people always say, like, you don't care about anything. No. Listen, everybody is everybody, listen, should not give a shit whatever the people think, period. And I tell everybody out there anyway. Be you. And you know what? You'll find the people who you connect with and you want to be around anyway. Life is too short to be around the people you don't want to be around. I told people
exactly.
A couple of things I told people. I said, listen, I don't do this. I don't go to parties just to go to parties, and I don't want to be there. I don't want to waste time. Why be there? I don't want to be there. Why am I going to go waste 5 hours of my day and how many days you got left? And I'm 62 and, you know, what do you live to, 80? I'm just
Time's
saying.
Time's the only non-renewable resource.
Yeah,
we have,
you got so. That right, man. I tell that to everybody. I have one of my posters. It says, "Time you can use it." I'll have to get that one for you. But it's so true, you know. And I try to tell that to all people with time. You know, that's the only thing. I mean, anything you can get money back. You can do something different. You can figure out. You know, and what it just drives me nuts. But and. So where do you want to go with it?
With what?
No, which ones you think it'd be a good idea? You think it'd be good?
To look into the corruption surrounding the Bureau of Prisons?
I mean, yeah, to see whether the Bureau of Prisons, you know, how in bed are they even with the Bureau of Prisons? And how, in, you know, hey, listen, all they got to do is go over there and recruit. Hey, listen, any warden that's going to retire, give us a year notice. We'll find a place. You can start out at $250,000 or whatever. You know what I mean? Whatever they can do.
No, yeah. I mean, it's valuable to investigate that either way. But again, I feel the issue of revolving door politics is more a open secret at this point. And it's a matter of, again, channeling people in certain directions to address these particular issues in the first place. If you're able to get some sort of bombshell instance of corruption that is pretty cut and dry, that can accelerate that process, I suppose. But it does just come down to...
Just another corruption case?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I said that to somebody the other day.
Unfortunately.
Oh, man, you know, can this happen? I said, listen, this is happening every day. It's just not, you know, you're thinking it can't happen because it's your city. But it's happening.
Yeah.
Hey, listen to this thing on time. I wanted to show you. This is what one of my posters say. Time is free, but it's priceless. You can't own it, but you can use it. You can't keep it, but you can spend it. Once you've lost it, you can never get it back. That is pretty cool. That is really Harvey McKay, whoever he is. But I love that. Oh, Nick, look at that picture. I looked at this. This is amazing. And click up on the remote and watch what happens. Yeah, this is crazy.
Oh, how is Nick?
No, Nick is here. Nick is working on something else, and he messed up. But I'll help him. I'm the tech genius in this room. Actually, look at you.
Of
laughing.
All people.
Anyway, hey, Scott. I mean, I want to do something with you on this. You know, a project like that. I don't know what you want to do. If you want to do one of them.
No, I'd be interested in at least investigating with you a bit so we can dredge up and present.
Well, you know,
could be interesting, could be important.
Well, you know, after watching everything on TV about, you know, about the courts, you know, I don't know if you knew Atlanta was shut down, Atlanta prison was shut down. I don't know if you knew this also, in Atlanta prison.
No, that's new to me.
Yeah, what happened was Congress, they called it a threat to the southeast of the United States of America. Not even just to Atlanta, not to Georgia, the state, not to Georgia and Florida, to the southeast of the United States. So when you think about it.
For what reason?
Because there was so much corruption and crime, and inmates were being let out, and they left the door open, and cops were bringing more drugs and guns into the prison.
That's kind of ridiculous and unacceptable. So.
Well, listen, it was on Congress. They actually, it was right on the floor of Congress, and Now, I don't know, but here's what I found out. This is why it pissed me off, too. I haven't heard about one person getting fired. Not one person. How does this happen, and you put all this down, and then you don't fire one person, not the warden or anybody? Oh, we're going
to transfer people.
These
internal investigations, and as you said, transfers around the country, it's a good way of presenting it as though you're doing something when in reality you're making no substantive changes. You're not.
You're doing worse because you're putting these people on other prisons. You know they're scumbags.
You're spreading the poison around the entire country, which 100%. Is precisely what we need.
Oh, yeah. Let's not. Okay, we're not going to fire them. You know, that's not the. That's a little harsh. So let's just transfer them to all the different prisons. So what do you. Is this a test to see which prison becomes the worst? I mean, obviously, none of these people stepped up. None of these people stopped the problems going on there. None of the people, they found 250 cell phones in one day. I mean, the place is it was not a prison, you know. And this is, I was there. It was one of the worst prisons in the country at the time. So it's crazy.
In cases like that, the only real way of addressing it is to have some sort of external investigation on those systems with at least a degree of authority in terms of meeting out punishments or instituting institutional changes to, again, actually address it on a more fundamental level rather than 100% sort of PR moves.
You know, Scott, what happens when people don't get is, and the reason I said that even police agencies, every agency has to have an independent, and I don't care about your internal affairs, I don't care about another police department either. I want an independent investigation arm of something that investigates. Like they have the inspector general in the federal system. Now those people, inspector generals, can do anything. I mean, they inspect the whole entire system. So now they need to have that in everything. And not only the Bureau of Prisons, they need to have that in law enforcement and any job you have. Because it's just, I can't work with you. Scott, if you and I were working together, no matter what we did, firemen, police, I don't care, construction workers. I don't care what we did, you and I, office workers. I'm talking to you every day. We're hanging out, having a drink now and then, whatever we do. How am I ever going to investigate you with a clear head? I'm not.
Exactly.
I'm not. I mean, I'll be honest. No, the guy's a good guy. I'm going to look for ways to make sure you're innocent. You know, which they should do anyway. But my point is it's you can't do it. So you got these agencies investigating. They worked with him on the street, on the parole for 3 years with this guy and that guy. How can you do it? You cannot, no way, be arbitrary. You know, you can
fully unbiased.
Of course you can't. It's like your brother, your sister. That's why you can't be in the court. You can't be on a jury with a person.
Can't testify against your spouse.
You can, technically, you can. You're not compelled to. You can. You can voluntarily do that.
Oh, okay. Well, point still stands.
Yeah, oh, I've seen it happen. That's why. Stupid bitch.
No, fair enough. Fair enough.
I won't say it. I'm like mess with you, kid. So whenever I think of stuff like that with research, even Nick and I actually were talking about that, about you. I said, man, we could do a good research. You know, I mean, we get someone like Scott who's really good at it. Because you are good. I mean, I don't know if you just, the way you got the knowledge of how to put that in. You know who you remind me of? You know the YouTuber CoffeeZilla?
I'm familiar with CoffeeZilla, yeah.
You remind me of him. I mean, like, the way you do your research.
That's very kind of you.
Yeah, I mean.
No, he's someone that I watch. He's someone that I look up to. He's a great content creator, and he does pretty important work in, you know, exposing and documenting a lot of fraud and shenaniganery and
good.
Really just the financial sector. So yeah, definitely.
No. There's a couple of those guys, but he's good the way he presents his stuff and how he's came along on his YouTube channel and how he's upgraded. You know, it's that stuff we look at. That stuff's good stuff, you know, because I think things are going back towards that or what I want to, you know, like do something like what a good piece on. I think people would like a show like showing that, you know. Look at the money. Look at this. Boom. You know the way you're good at it. You put it together nice when you put some of your stuff together. You know how you have an arrow going from one to the other and whatever.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Logical progression.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's pretty cool. And but you know, it's because it's something I think that people listen. I sometimes, you know, I get upset. I watch a lot of certain things, and then I get a lot of, then I go to the other side to get more opinion on it, whatever side it's at. And then you kind of, I even try to BCC, British Broadcasting, BBC, because get a lot of good information from the BBC, you know. It's unbiased here.
Definitely.
You know, so it's somewhere.
Well, it's without a lot of the biases that U.S. media would have. So,
oh, I'm definitely. So sick of the media. I'm in it enough, and I've been behind the scenes enough to know pretty much how much bullshit it is, number one. They all, once they became 24-hour cycles, that is what made it. They had to keep their ratings high throughout a show, and what do? You entertain. You don't just give news. You know, the old news days, everybody huddled around a TV at 6 o'clock at night. You know, those guys were trusted news guys. You trusted when they said something. They weren't lying to you. Now, I can go to MSNBC and listen to something. Then I can go to Fox, listen, and I swear you wouldn't even know it's the same topic. It blows you away. You know that, I'm sure. I don't know how much politics you watch, you know, or how much TV you watch, or, you know, that kind of stuff, court stuff like that. I mean, I try to get. I love
not much TV, but I'm reading articles. I'm watching
YouTube,
watching news clips, etc.
Yeah, me, us too. That's what we got. YouTube on 24/7, pretty much, literally 24/7, and we always have something on it. You know what I mean? And whether it's a trial of this or Joe Rogan or this one, whoever, you know, it's what we do. We love that, and it's cool though. You know, I think it's cool. So, but who knows? And I always love to do projects myself that now I love, like figuring out age and why, you know, we know science knows right now. How old are you, Scott?
About to turn 26.
Same as Nick. Exactly. I remember that. Right. He's 26. Your guys' brains have just matured. I mean, that's by science, not mine. I mean, give or take. A male is 25 and a female is 23. Before the brain fully matures. How are we letting kids go in the military and have guns and be cops when they're 20, 21, and this guy's supposed to have maturity level? You know, you can't be a congressman until you're 25. Can't be a senator until you're 30, or the president until 35. But we're letting...
The age requirements for a political office, they got those surprisingly good, even 2.5 centuries ago.
Right.
But now the current conception of age of majority at 18, if you're in the U.S. or most Western countries for that matter, as just it's really bucking up against biology at this point.
100%. Because biology is saying they mature older. Right. You know?
Yeah.
And that I mean, pretty much is known. I think people that get it twisted, like, I went in the military at 17, and, you know, back in my father's days and all those days, you know, back in World War One, people were enlisting early. They didn't have ways to
check.
I mean,
that would probably be useful if you needed cannon fodder to storm Normandy with.
Right.
Have half-propagandized warm bodies that can take bullets. That's useful on a sort of war planning perspective, but on an individual level, which I think we need to be more conscientious of and concerned about, it's not the best. So,
well, you know, with all the conflict going on around the world, like you said, Ukraine and of course Russia, and then you have Palestine and Israel. Nick, did you give him his stuff? Because all the stuff going on around the world, and we are so lucky not to be have anything happen on our homeland. I think it just we are geographically. We are the best country in the world geographically. Two major oceans, Atlantic, Pacific. You got the South, you got deserts, and you got tropics. And, you know, we have everything in the United States. We can feed our own people. We have our own oil. If you want to talk, we have one country on either border, not multiple, and they both happen to be allies. you know, it, and you talk about a buffer zone for even land, you couldn't invade through one of those countries to get to us without, you know, we'd have a bombs raining on them like they wouldn't, you know, either country so yeah. big. So, I mean, we just, if you want to look at geopolitically, the geographics of the world and how the United States is laid out, it's such a perfect country. And we're just, we are the fortunate that we're born here. I mean, if you were yeah. born in Ethiopia or you're born in Costa Rica, wherever you're born, you're going to love your country. Everybody has their own prides, but, you know, and I think that's also hurts us.
That is one tangible, definite benefit to the United States, to being an American, to being born in the U.S. Yeah, it's the auspices of geography.
Oh, so. Absolutely, Scott. If you even think about that 1 second, how are American young people off compared to any other country? And forget bad countries. I mean, don't even go there. You know, they're the worst of the worst. Even go to middle countries, and you're going to see how. I'm not saying they don't do. There's not good people, and they don't do some good. But when you take the majority of things, we do pretty good in the United States, you know. And we're just lucky. That's not George Collins said it. That's, you know, that's not pride. You're proud to be American. You were born here. It's not like you were, you know, it's who you are, your blood. You were born here. You got lucky, you know. Your parents didn't get off
in
the Mayflower
ways, yeah.
or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he can come forever and be here for a few generations. I don't know. So I look at that. So, but I don't want to hold you too long, but I did want to touch base with you. I'm loving that we got to touch base about it. And I hope we come up with a project I can announce that we, you know, now you got something in your head anyway. You could.
Yeah, I love that.
Give it a little, give it a little bounce around. Like how can we make that if we prove whatever, you know, like or
demonstrate some reasonable connection?
Oh, exactly. So. Where it's logical. This is, you know, I mean, how do all these guys leave one position making $150,000, go to these other positions make $1 million? Why? I mean, is that the normal stroke of promotion in this field? Then tell everybody to. How do wardens get bonuses? How do they, you know, how are they judged?
Oh,
they...
the incentive structure that you have discussed in terms of prison administration is beyond perverse.
Oh.
The yeah. way in which people are rewarded for running prisons, again, from what you've told me,
a bonus.
Running as trim a ship as possible, which is to say giving people or giving inmates garbage services that they are essentially obliged to, which is again a punishment that they were not given. They're supposed to be behind bars for 10, 15, 20 years. They're not supposed to be behind bars 10, 15, 20 years with hardtack and stale water filled with measles or
right.
mosquito larvae or something and
operated
on with rusty scalpels and bullshit.
Oh, and come out so much. You know, the lifespan is so much less than another person who never went because of the damage it does to your sleep, your this, everything else, and go on and on. So it's...
Now, in no way should inmates and prisoners be given lobster bisque or
shrimp skewers
or something like that. I'm in no way advocating for something like that. I don't think any reasonable person would. But a reasonable baseline of nutrition, of healthcare, of basic human services and amenities to... keep them sane, keep them reasonably well, both because it's right during their stay in prison and it will allow them to remain tethered and somewhat connected to society once they're inevitably released.
Hold 1 sec, okay? Hello? Hello?
Hey, did you make it home?
Yes, I'm home. I'm on the air. So are you.
Oh, we're on the air. Hey, caller, what would you like to know? Hey, Larry, what's your favorite color?
That's a good one. Blue, red.
Yeah, I'd say mostly red.
Red, white, okay. And blue.
Yay.
USA.
America.
See, I'm America. I'm a Donald Trump, and I'm America.
Mark, I told Nick I want to be on the list, and he said, what list?
Oh, Nick, what? You told Nick?
Yes, Laura,
Laura's on the phone, Nick. And she says he gave you a list. She wants to come to Germany. He said, no, you didn't. List. He said, no, you didn't.
Yeah, Germany? Nick said, what list?
Oh, he said, what list?
Where are you coming to Germany? I don't even know anything about this.
Oh, yeah. Well, September, we're going to...
I'm talking about Belgium, not Germany. No, I'm the fucking list.
Well, Germany. And we're going to stop in Belgium. Oh, he just got... Yep. He's just showing me. He's editing or something. I don't know what he's doing. I'm on the line.
All right.
I got another guy.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk
to you
guys.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Got home.
Bye.
I had a great time. Bye.
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 Hello? Hello? Scott?
Yep.
Oh, sorry about that. There was actually a doctor who was going to call in, but we kind of don't have the time, you know, anything. So, but we just said hello.
And, no, I got you. I got you.
And man, time flies when I'm thinking about, you know, what you could do. What I always watch, your career, and I look at guys like the Coffees or somebody else, the guys who investigate stuff or something like that. And I said, that's you. That's why I. Do you have a picture? Drew, do you want to put a picture on the when you're up talking?
Yeah, I'll send one your way. And, I don't know, shortly after we're finished up here.
Got it. Nick, do you need it sent any certain way or any certain size for the thumbnail? No, just send it to Nick. You have his email, right?
Yeah, I should be able to.
Yeah, it's Nicholas.
If not, I'll text you. You guys can figure it out from there.
Yeah. Just tell, because he's going to take this and take care of this from when we're done. But, I'll, you know, if you have an idea, let's try, because I'll put out a community post and ask them what they want to do, how they'd want to do that. And I think it'd be pretty cool. I think it'd be a good thing to do.
For sure.
Open
for
somebody's sure. eyes. See how much corruption is really out there. Probably hopefully. Even shock me. I don't know about that.
No, it's crazy. So.
Well, you know, I'd love to find out how you can get a connection. Is, you know, this guy goes, he becomes a lobbyist, and you see this one congressman's, you know, money going up. But I don't know. I will refer it. How would these congressmen all go to Congress? They make $170,000 a year, and they all come out worth $5-10 million. What investing they do, huh?
No, yeah.
So
the sort of pseudo insider trading that they're able to engage in doesn't.
You're in a meeting. You just approved a $20 billion contract for, you know, Northrop Grumman to build missiles. And you just sign the approval. So you walk outside and you say, call my stockbroker. Buy all the shares you can of this before this announcement. Before you know it, the announcement's worth, you know, he made $500,000. So
pretty much.
That's pretty much exactly how it goes. And they do it. They don't quit. But it is what it is. Anyway, Scott, anything else?
The one other thing worth harping on and what I thought we'd be chatting a bit more about is in regards to rehabilitation in general and some of the programs that could be implemented for prisons to rehabilitate their inmates, reduce recidivism, that sort of thing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I talk about that all the time. I didn't know I didn't want to throw too many at you, but I
understand.
No, I love that. Programs. Listen, there's a reason the United States has the highest recidivism rate in the world. It's because we do nothing for them. We just think they're going to go away and say, okay, now I'm better, or whatever it is. You go to Germany, Sweden, all the Nordic systems, anything like that, and they are so much more rehabilitative. They're more family-orientated.
They don't, again, treat their prisoners like they are unequivocally and always the dregs of society. They do what they can to treat them as human beings, to not give them an environment or an excuse to completely abandon hope or drop out of society, because again, at the end of the day, they're going to be released at one point or another, and it behooves us to set these people up for failure, where that failure will affect us negatively down the line as well.
100%. And it's you know, programming. And again, they give it lip service. This is what people don't understand. They're going to come back and say, we have a program. We have this already. Yeah, you do have it, but
well,
you don't have it.
Well, it's fine to have it, but if it's servicing 10% of your inmate population, then you 10% have it for all intents and purposes.
Not even that. How about forget the 10%? How about it has it and then it goes away? Or it had it and it went away? Or we're using the money for something else. We needed security. We're lacking guards, so we need it for security. That, you know, the Bureau of Prisons or any prison system has the greatest line in the world to get away from things. And I heard it because I sued them enough. It's for the safe and orderly running of the institution, we decided to cancel recreation today. For the safe and orderly running of the institution, we decided to skip meal two today. For the safe and orderly running of the institution, we decided to stop recreation at 5 o'clock today for the next 6 months. For the safe, that word for the safe and orderly running of an institution is the catch-all, because it literally is a mother of everything. For the safe and orderly running, so we don't kill people, we're going to do this, or we're going to get an extra doctor. And they're not. We're going to kill, you know, knock off doctors because there's a line. And they justified it because they said someone got killed on the line waiting, so they didn't want line, so they said, let's have medical care. You know what I mean? They're going to come up with something. And it's the biggest crock of shit in the world, what I witnessed in my life.
No, it kind of sounds like it. As you said, it's just a catch-all excuse to post facto justify any and all policy changes they want, whether or not they're beneficial. But from what you're telling me, it seems like in the vast majority of cases, they aren't beneficial policy changes.
You know, it's funny because, you know, I sued them once. And I became an expert on what they call this, Code of Federal Regulations. See, they have, it's called the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations. That's set down by law, yep. The code, and then it goes to the departments. And then the departments, whether it's the Justice Department, the Bureau of Prisons, the FBI, they're all under that department, the Justice Department. Now, the Justice Department has the Code of Federal Regulations, sets down, and then the policies of those companies followed what they call the CFR. Well, I had many times where they said, we don't follow our own policy. So you're telling me that if you don't follow your own policy, you're not following the CFR because it's set by the CFR. Oh, it's not exactly. We're more stringent, so we don't have to follow that one. And I end up winning a court case where they do. Marty, what's the matter, Marty? He keeps itching and scratching. Is he all right? Oh, maybe it's the medicine. So anyway, what I was getting at was with the CFRs, I see them try to jockey. And, you know, I remember a friend dying. And we went up, we were mad, it was a big thing. I was in the hole, tortured to try to shut me up. And, you know, we ended up, one of the lieutenants told me, he goes, his family gets paid. Like, what are you talking about? He's dead. Yeah, he goes, the Bureau of Prisons, they have a fund that just pays for, you know, like deaths and stuff like that. Like, it's like their
wrongful
own
wrongful deaths, presumably.
Yeah, or whatever. It's their own contingency fund, you know, to wipe shit out, you know, with a note, you know, you can't reveal it, you know, no disclosure clause, you know. And so it's just such bullshit that, you know, it's big business. And, you know, maybe I'm getting jaded again. Is the older I get, the more I say, is it ever going to really change? Or just get in the game. Fucking play the game with everybody, you know what I mean, and live the best way you can. You know, that's almost how you start thinking, and I don't like to think like that.
No, I think that long term, that just leads to worse outcomes for everyone. Really, it's better to fight for a better world, generally speaking, than a better world for yourself. Prior case, you have people in your camp who will help you when you're, you know, down on your luck as well. And the latter, you've only been fighting for yourself. You're only going to be able to rely on yourself. And, you know, there are risks with that, shall we say.
Yeah, you know, for a young guy, you're pretty smart. And, but it's hard to get young people to think like you just said. You know, the older you get, you do think that way. You say, you know, I got 20 years left. And that's not being a morbid person. I'm not being morbid in one bit.
It's just the reality of the situation.
I'm 60 yeah. fucking two. You know, 82? Am I doing this? You know what I mean? No, I don't know. I'm lucky if I'm fucking alive, and I know that. So, and I'm not being, again, that's just normal. My dad died that age. A lot, all my grandparents died younger. It's just what it is, you know? And so that's just, I'm a realist. I'm, oh, I'm going to live forever. No, another 50 years. No, I don't. You do. Nick does. Got another 60 good years, you know, with medicine and stuff, and really knock it out of the park, change the world, I say to young people. If they just take the mistakes I made, don't make them, you know, take all the good and learn from it. You know, we learn from our, you know, mistakes. And that's not the way to go. They say, learn from your mistakes. Yeah, definitely learn.
No, there's a
better to
the
learn
smart
without
person, no, the smart person learns from his mistakes. The wise person learns from others' mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. And then that's the way to do it, right? So, yeah. But anyway, with that, you know, I like your ideas, obviously. Again, just don't get jaded. It's hard. It is hard. Nick gets jaded already, and you know, just because he's seen a lot already, you know? And it's just, that's the way it is. I mean, but it's better to have that knowledge than other kids.
It is difficult, so.
Oh, yeah. But it's better to have that knowledge, you know what I mean? I look at that and say, have that knowledge of
no, it's important to have that. And the other thing is that I think it's just logical to not be jaded, because if you are jaded, you're not going to be productive. It's, you're not going to make any difference or improve your lot or others' lots if you're just straight jaded. Now, don't be like blindly optimistic or filled with hope when it perhaps isn't warranted, but don't completely abandon it, because, well, it just won't do you much good.
No, I always say, I don't even hang around with I want to see the people, and I want to hang with the people who believe the glass is half full, not half empty. You know,
for sure.
Being around energetic, lively, positive people, there is much research done about successful people, hanging around with successful people.
100%.
You know, negativity, that's you get people and they are negative about every fucking thing in the world. And it gets so old, you know what I mean? What the fuck?
No, yeah.
You know, I mean, no, fucking it's sunny out, it's nice, go fucking light a cigar and fucking jerk off or something. Have fun, do something, you know what I mean? And it just drives you crazy, because it seems like those are the people you can give them $1 million and they're pissed you didn't give them $2 million. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, really, there's people like that, you know? There's people who just, no matter what you do, you couldn't change. They just, you know, when we were kids, we used to call them negative Nellies. You know, that's what we call them.
I've heard negative Nancys before.
Negative Nellies. You know? So, and, but, you know what I mean? Now you guys call them Karens. Those crazy bitches. Right? Isn't it Karens?
It's not that Karens aren't a thing. It's just they probably don't translate one-to-one with the negative Nellies you were talking about. Those just seem like grumps and hardline pessimists. Karens are individuals that are ticked off at the slightest inconvenience or XYZ not being perfectly up to standard, often to help them. So, slight nuance difference.
I get a kick out of listening to them, like getting in people. You can't do that. That's, you know, I love when people say you can't do it, the government can't do something. I go, listen to me, buddy. The United States went into Panama. They decided that Noriega was a drug dealer. They put him in a plane. It just happened. Just happened.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The actions of the United States in Central and South America are questionable and replete with, so.
100%.
That's something more and more people are beginning to see and acknowledge and take issue with. So.
Oh.
Different topic for a different day.
100%. You know, it's just that's a topic that, like, you know, listen, you want to talk about, was Reagan a drug dealer during the Iran-Contra affair? I mean, you know, you want to get down to it? Why didn't another country come to the United States and put Reagan in handcuffs and take him to their prison? The only reason didn't do it is because we got a bigger army than them. That's the only reason.
Pretty much.
And that's the only reason we did it to Noriega, because he's coming from Panama. If that was Russia and that was Putin, we ain't going in there to go get Putin. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a crock of shit. It's, you know, and listen, I love my country, but I don't believe this is the all star spangled banner bullshit, you know, you see in the world. You know, it's not as what people think sometimes, you know?
No, I'm with you there on that, in that the sense or idea of American exceptionalism throughout the past three or four generations has, I think, largely been to our disadvantage, because it gives us a chip on our shoulder and a blind spot on what the United States is. The U.S. is exceptional insofar as there is only one United States. There's only one country in this geographical area with 350 million or so people existing and doing stuff on this planet. That's true. But we're a country like any other. We're capable of having flaws like any other. And in thinking that we are exceptional and above it all, again, gives us a blind spot to these issues that need to be focused on, frankly, and in turn addressed. So
you are, you know, you're 100% right. You know, I'm telling you, it keeps reminding me, if you never saw it, you got to go back and see it. Aaron Sorkin's Newsroom. Just watch the opening 15 minutes of that show, and it will, you will guaranteed watch that show. It's the best show that's ever been produced. If you haven't seen it, it's called The Newsroom. And just Google on YouTube, Newsroom opening scene, America, whatever, something. And he's a news reporter, and he's on a panel, and he has to talk about, you know, All Spangled Banner America. And just listen to his speech, and it'll blow you away. And I really want
you. I think I know what you're talking about. I just looked it up. I'm seeing snippets of it that I believe I've seen before. It's
Jeff Daniels.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you just sit down and watch that, the full whatever minutes it is, and just to substitute, they're on a panel. It's the opening of the show, opening of a show. Aaron Sorkin, one of the best writers in the world ever. He wrote this, and he only writes two seasons, I think, or three, and he's done. Closed it. I mean, that's how good he is, you know? And he put that together, and it was unbelievable when I tell you how he did that. And how he made these characters who they were, and it was the whole show was based around actual events and everything. You know, I love shows like that. Just like I was a big reader, and W.E.B. Griffin, it's called. They had books. It's called The Lieutenants, and then the Colonels, the Captains, the Generals. You know, these are books by W.E.B. Griffin. And you follow this character throughout all these books. Porky Waterford, a general. And I remember this. Can you believe this? That was so many thousands of books ago. But it was just, I love those books. And I would get into the characters so deep. And it's just like this, you know, it's the same thing. And you got to watch that. One of the best things ever you'll ever read. And it's going to stick in you forever. People who heard it remember it vividly. So, and you just do that. And you're young, and you're pretty much, you're more of an optimist and more of a positive person than most young people your age. And that's a bright side, though. Don't ever lose that. It's hard, but don't ever lose that. We need guys like
you. I appreciate it. It's the pessimism and the negativity in my generation, or simply like people around my age, I more than understand given the bleak state of affairs over the past decade or so, I'd say.
I agree. I'm not knocking it. Agree.
But yeah, not knocking them in the slightest. It's just Nick. There's a place for a sort of depression or wallowing over the, you know, shit state of the world. But then you need to figure out how to address that, how to change it, how to
right live your best,
progress things in a desirable manner,
and live your best. Right? You know, try. You know, exactly. I think it's more about the juggling and everything else, but that's just life, and I think that's what makes life exciting a little bit sometimes. So, you know, everybody has to do it their own way, you know. And I just think technology has made it where younger guys like you guys knew. I think there was the same kind of shit when I was growing up, but we didn't know it because it was the 6 o'clock news that got their press release, and they got their press release from the Department of Defense. You know, the Pentagon, and they did that, and the White House did another press release, and that's all you got, and you had to believe them, and the whole work. Now, forget about it. You know, there's information coming from so many sources, you're just looking for the one who's the fucked up one. You know what I mean? And it's a shame, but that's what it is. So,
well, I mean, the issue there is that instead of there being a singular source of information and no real way of getting additional perspectives or what have you. We're inundated with almost too much information of varying quality and reliability and trustability that it leads to the same sort of paralysis in your perspectives and choices because you're not able to pin down exactly what's going on, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, but, you know, I don't know. I'm more of a...
I think this is preferable to the limited information streams of the past. It's just, you know, it's not all positive, not all roses at the moment in terms of the information landscape.
Well, you know, I don't know. I almost buck on those things because I think we there's so much information. Maybe it's too much, but that's okay, too. You know, they always say there's never too much. It's how you disseminate it. So, I mean, all the information you do get and where you get your information. Obviously, I think the biggest problem in today's world, if you want to follow a narrative, it is very easy to find numerous articles and everything that you want to read and believe and you want to believe. You literally can type that in and you will get a renowned professor agreeing with your exact stance or whatever it is. But you know, he's really been proven down in five other magazines or whatever it is.
Well, so, yeah, that's the other thing, that you can find resources to substantiate and support whatever belief you already have. If you go in wanting to believe something, you can very easily strengthen that perspective if you don't have a sufficiently open mind on your beliefs on a particular matter.
That is, you know, what do you think has happened with the president, Donald Trump? I mean, people want to believe certain things and they'll believe it. Now, again, get Nick, he's back and forth. I think he just has to go out. I think the dog is really, he's confused. Seems confused. Yeah. Anyway, and so what happens, Scott, is that most people, like, you know, we have such busy lives, everybody, and whether it's family, vacation, going golfing, going this, reading a book, doing this, you say, again, that's my old thing. I'm not wasting time, you know? So when I want to put on something, I put it on. You know what I mean? Like the TV or whatever it is. So I look at it like that with, you know, too much information or too much. There's so much out there, man. It's like I'm sitting here saying to myself, there's so many things I can look up right now that I wanted information to know. How much time do you have? So people don't have time to follow your situation or a bureau situation or this situation unless I think it has to affect them. And that's what I always get back to. I think we have to find things that affect us or you believe they affect you. Why do people donate to abortion places? Because maybe they had an abortion or their sister had an abortion. Things happened and it affected them in certain ways or whatever it is. And that's their belief and it helped them and they watched that person and nobody will change their mind. And that's good. I mean, I believe that, you know. First of all, it's choice, period, anyway. But if that's making sense. So I'm more of a, you know, I know how easy it is to get jaded because I look and say, well, does it really matter? Who gives a shit what we think anymore? There's no global warming. There's none. I think there is. I think it's a natural progression. Everybody believes in it, but nobody knows to what end and how to fix it. And these people come up with these zany ideas that the, you know, Florida, the Keys weren't going to be around by 2000. There was going to be no more Florida Keys. My buddy just sold a house down there for $1.4 million. You know, so they're going crazy down there. You know, if that's a place that's going underwater anytime soon, these rich people are stupid. So, I mean,
well, wealth does not necessarily correlate with intellect.
I was the only answer you could have gave there, but. Meaning, you know, but they do have money for a reason, and most of them are not, you know, inherited, whether it's earned or, you know, how they got their knowledge, what schools they went, whatever it is, you know, you got to appreciate that. You know, you can like Donald Trump or hate Donald Trump. Guy's not stupid, manipulative. I can go a lot of names, but he's not stupid. People say, oh, he is stupid. No, you cannot stay on top like that. Jets, planes, this, being stupid. Whether you're a smart criminal or smart at something, you're not stupid. So I think people got to get that through their heads. But
I mean, there are, when we say or think smart or dumb, it's often in a totalizing sense, when in reality, there are plenty of areas where people, where an individual may be smart in, and there are plenty of areas where an individual may be completely idiotic in. I majored in chemistry, for example. I have some background and some knowledge in chemistry and STEM and the sciences from that, but I'd probably be incompetent at laying roof tile or cutting piping for plumbing or pursuits of that sort. So,
I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't. You didn't never know, you know. Like, yeah. I agree. I mean, my definition of fixing something with a tool is I'm going to get a hammer. If it doesn't work with that hammer, I'm going to get a bigger hammer. And if it don't work with that, I'm getting a bigger hammer until I have to get a new piece. So it's, you know, I'm not your answer to that kind of stuff. And that's okay. And I'm not the answer to that too. I guess I'm more of an experience-driven person in everything I do. And I think that's, obviously, there's no better experience than having experience. You know, you give, oh, I love these guys who want to do prison reform, or all these news guys that want to do stuff. Never did a day inside. They have no idea what it's like to get out. They have no idea what it's like to get on that bus. They have no idea to get how it is to get that call at nighttime. And, you know, lock up Lawton, pack up, you're going home. Or, you know, no anticipation of every call that you get. Is it something bad or good? That and then when you get out, that expectation of every time you see a cop car, they're going to come arrest me or whatever it is. You know, you're more comfortable confined than you are in the free world. So they don't know that, and they're telling me how to do rehabilitation. Go fuck yourselves, because you don't know. That's like me asking me how to be a electrician. I don't know. Ask me how to put a fucking tile on the floor or a tile in a bathroom. Nick did tiling, and I told him that's about $700. He laughed. It's about $10,000, because I have no clue. I don't know tile. So, you know, I mean, ask a person who's been there. Don't go to a media guy because he read some books and he talked to some people. He doesn't know the feeling. And that's just knowledge. Now, can he co-write with a me, you know, like you and I can do? Absolutely. And I can maybe express the feelings they have, the anxiety, the this, the you know, the trepidations, you get caught for something else you didn't do, all the things that go through your mind when you're getting out of prison, you know, and they don't do that. They want to say, oh, I got the answer. Yeah, I'm a Harvard grad. I don't give a fuck what school. Did you go to Leavenworth? If you didn't go to Leavenworth or Lewisburg or wherever, Atlanta, you didn't go to prison. You didn't go to school. You went to your bullshit school. That's, you don't get school.
Well, you don't have sufficient perspective on these matters.
Of course not. You put that guy in that environment in prison, he's going to be my bitch. He's going to be everybody's bitch. He's going to do whatever we want him to do. And it's just the way it is. I mean, I'm not trying to, it's not being tough. I'm not just telling life. I am out of place in a fucking library. You know how loud I speak, Scott. I mean, I can't do it. But you know what I'm saying?
I get you.
I am more at home in a fight or in a, you know, in a debate or in an argument or what do you call it? Like a loose situation, you know, at a bar or wherever.
Less formal.
Yes, less formal. You seem formal. I think you seem non-formal too. So, I mean, maybe that's a gift. So,
I guess you could say I prefer formal environments, but I am capable of navigating less formal environments.
Yeah, formal environments are good, but a lot of times you get people who just have to be there, their suits and stuff like that from academia or stuff like that.
No, yeah.
You know, but when you get to those functions at the country club and you get people there who lost a kid to crime or his son is in jail, his grandson is, you know what I mean? You get people who are there because they want to hear the topic. And then they want to see how they can help or what they can do, whether it's money or not. Some want to write letters. Some want, you know, and I love that when I hear that, you know, because people think it has to take money. No, it could be take something else. It take a little time, a little communication skills. So I kind of look at that, Scott, and I look at ways. You know, so the formal settings are yes, but that's your book, people. When I was recognized on Congress, that was just formal bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when I was sworn in St. Louis, that's a formal thing. It was all formal, and I had like 20 police chiefs, and, you know, it was a big deal, you know, newspapers and all this kind of stuff. So, but then when I spoke at the academy in a more informal way, but that was more powerful, more, you know, people got more out of that. And I like it too. So it's because it's, I know the people there want to know the information or want to learn. You go to these formal information, formal big things, and they just there because it's, you know, they got the tickets from their boss. Their boss tells them they have to be there. And, you know, because they had to donate to this guy, whatever the hell they had to do. And I get it, and that's good, and they always have a special tip. And maybe you catch a couple people. But you get to those places where they want to be there, that's your room. You know, that's your room. And you know why preachers do so well? Because you're going into their house, and they're controlling
them. Going to see them.
Exactly. And, yep. And they control the environment. They control the sound, the temperature. Everything is a science. You know this. And they keep you in that chair to sell you bullshit. I'm sorry, I'm not religious, but they'll sell you a dream of salvation, and it doesn't cost anything to them but words, and it costs you 10% to tithe or whatever that was. So,
yeah, pretty much.
You know, don't get me on that topic. Talk about the best business in the world. How is that a business? You don't have to have inventory or nothing. You don't have to pay taxes on any of the stuff you do, anything. That's a hell of a fucking business.
Yeah, it's something.
There you go. All right, anything else you want to get going, or are we good on a couple of topics to look into?
No, yeah, I think we ran the gamut, ran the bases.
I mean, it's again, crime.
It's just about emphasizing the importance and, I guess, personal benefits associated with investing in and supporting rehabilitation programs for prisons in general. The right move.
Maybe we could even talk about their stock. It probably, you know, why it's not a good time to buy stock. How many contracts are they losing? I know the federal government didn't want to give them, but they do have some kind of stuff. So, I mean, you know what I mean?
With private prisons?
Right.
Yeah.
So we can look into that and say, oh, look at their stock price is doing this. Who wants to invest in this? And they're going to need to do this. But where do they think that, where do these rich people think this money's coming from if they're shutting them down? You know, why would you invest in this? And if they are, and something happened, we got to know why. Because they're going to be in part of something else, you know? That's really when you want to really, that's when you open an eyes and someone says to that company, who is these guys that are busting our chops, costing us hundreds of millions of dollars in stock price? Send somebody after, they send people to kill us. Listen.
And that's what you're seeing with fucking Boeing.
Right? Oh my God, is that crazy? Fucking Boeing. Now, you know what they say? You know, that if Donald Trump gets elected, they say if his plane is a Boeing plane, that's a way to take him out. They have him up in his plane. The plane crashes.
I disavow. I disavow.
Right. Of course they disavow. We all disavow. This is only allegedly. And what they said is allegedly that they can now have, look, Boeing's been having problems. That's what happened to the plane. Sorry, all of them died on board, you know, the whole family and everything else. And,
well, I mean, the issue with Boeing is just that they have not been fulfilling their safety inspections on new planes entering the airspace for quite some time now. And the issues that would have been caught were they properly quality controlled are allowed to manifest, shall we say.
Yeah.
And
they get
the
through.
The consequences are, fortunately, thus far, have been relatively minor. We haven't seen any deaths or catastrophic failures associated with it. But these minor issues belie major issues just beneath the surface. And who knows which 737 or 747 will be the one to, again, have some catastrophic failure. And
but you know what? Yeah. It's still the safest way to travel. When you talk about,
no, yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Plane crashes, 250 people. Think about that. That is nothing in industry that flies millions and millions of people all over the world.
No, yeah, statistically, it's a incredibly minor blip, and average-wise, it doesn't push the needle much. But it doesn't detract from the fact that it is a ridiculous and, for all intents and purposes, avoidable tragedy. That's the crux of this.
And more of a psychological thing. Meaning, you know how many people are going to be scared or this or I won't step on a plane. What companies might not want to buy a plane?
Reframing it in terms of self-interest. If their planes are viewed as unreliable flying pieces of shit, people aren't going to go into the skies, and then their revenues are going to drop, which they can't have. So it's the decisions by these companies to hyper-prioritize short-term performance and profits at the expense of even median-term performance and reception is just mind-boggling and depressing and infuriating that is the current dominant corporate culture, for all intents and purposes.
Well, you know, it's
ridiculous.
That's why Warren Buffett did so well in not doing that. You know, Warren Buffett has, you know, stayed on companies who are consistent, not great, not bad, but consistent. And he didn't go in there.
Consistent and decent.
You know, like I know he owns NetJets. And the way he treats his employees is amazing. I gotta love that guy. He gives every one of his employees and their whole families full medical, dental, everything. Full medical, dental. I know a person who works for them. And totally, family, everything. All the way up to 26 for kids, the whole work, you know what I mean? Everything.
No, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's no out-of-pocket costs, nothing. He's just amazing, you know? And he, of course, he hires the best because, you know, that's a very exclusive job. This one lady was telling me she, you know, have to sign all these things about you can't tell who you're flying. But she told me about these dogs. These two dogs, or this one dog, I think it was settled in a divorce of these freaking billionaires. And they had to fly the dog every week back and forth from each mansion to his or hers. And the dog got on a private NetJets plane. How do you like that? Fucking dog. Should have made him walk the whole way. No, I'm saying, is that crazy?
We have strange priorities in this country, in this world.
Oh, my God, is that crazy? But anyway, Warren Buffett is that steady guy. And, you know, I don't think he has any prison stock. How's that? And, again, he is. He also does decent companies, you know. He's smart.
Yeah.
Analytical. And, you know, he doesn't go for the hype, the flair. You can't bullshit him. He's fucking the steady Eddie guy, you know. Listen, I'll take that electric company. I know where they're going in the next 50 years or 100 years. And he knows it, and they tell him why, and then he becomes a majority shareholder in a company. So, you know, just a smart, very, you know. And I think that there's something to say for that. There really is. All right, Scott. I think, man, we've been on for a while. So we're going to get going. Thanks again, Scott, from Ziggy, like cigarettes, Ziggy Snake. You got to check it out, Ziggy Snake on YouTube. Just check out some of his videos. His videos are amazing. The research, the way he presents some things, guys, there will be a link in the description on this video and all over. So check his stuff out. He's really, listen, you can
catch him. I kind of just cover whatever, but you're sure to find something that will probably pique your interest on my channel.
Oh, you're gonna be up there. I'm gonna say, I remember when he was, you know, when he used to come on my show. Now he, you know, charges people.
Blow up, act like I know nobody. There we go.
Larry who?
Yeah.
All right, buddy. You take care. Let's connect. Let's come up with that topic, and then we'll, because then I'd love to run some surveys through the audiences too.
No, yeah, I'll definitely keep in touch. It sounds like a ton of fun.
You got it, buddy. Take care.
You too, Larry. Thanks again. Bye.
That is Scott Brady from Colorado. Ziggy Snake. It's Ciggy Snake. It's in a description link below. Check his stuff out. It does really good work. I look forward to doing stuff because this kid can research. And I think this is how they build up to be the CoffeeZillas of the world or whoever, like investigative guys like that. So anyway, everybody, I think that was great. You're going to hear some good stuff coming. It's Scott Brady. I hope you like them. Nick, we're going to have another guest come on, whatever it is. What is it? Tuesday. So we're moving along. Things are happening. All right, everybody, please hang in there. hold on. One note. I want to know if see what we can do with Nick. I was waiting. Nick was in Daydream, guys, and he wants to. We're gonna be leaving, guys. Have a great day. Stay safe. See you Tuesday.
Nothing compares to it.
But it's definitely something you should hear.
This is The Real Deal with Larry Lawton.